to do that on Zoom with this many people, so I'm going to dispense with that. So this class is all about the precepts, the 16 bodhisattva precepts, also known as the Kyoji Kaiman, which is the document that we use to talk about the precepts, to lay them out and so on. I want to talk a moment about Jukai and the retreat and the ceremony and what it means to take the precepts. So many, and some of the people in here have already taken the precepts, so we, you know, some of you know exactly what this is about, or mostly what this is about. I think it's something we keep discovering as we continue to practice. But what we do every year is we have a ceremony in which we allow people or invite people to take the precepts. And what that means is basically that you have done some work with them and you are committed to continuing to work with them, to have them affect your life, to have them, to follow them in some fashion. So, one thing I'll say right at the beginning is I really would like this to be fairly participatory, but it's kind of difficult in this setting to just sort of raise your hand and jump in. So we will do some breakout groups after a bit. This first one, I'm going to do some introductory stuff and maybe invite comments and questions at a couple of points, but then at some point I'm definitely going to do some breakout group towards the end, just so you know. So if you want to take the precepts this year, you need to do an interview with me first. And it's a half an hour interview. Basically, we can do it on Zoom or you can come in and do it in person. Basically, what it's about is so that we're all on the same page about what it means to take the precepts, what it doesn't mean, and kind of how we see it here, how we practice with it at Dharma Rain, which is not exactly the same as how they do it in other places. But you'll find, if you spend a lot of time with other Buddhist groups, you're going to find a fair amount of variation in sort of just how people do stuff. The basic teachings are the same, but you know, practices vary a little bit. So if you have questions or if you want to arrange an interview with me, you don't have to do it right away, but sometime during the course of these classes it would be good. You can contact me at genko@dharma-rain.org. On the chat, my email is there, and actually it's also on the website calendar page for that event.
And in the newsletter.
The retreat. So there's a week-long retreat. We'll do the 6 classes, and then the following week there is a week-long retreat from February 15th through 21st, and then we'll do the ceremony, the Jukai ceremony, on Sunday, February 21st. So just so you know, preview of coming attractions, that's how we're going. I've handed out to people here in the hall a copy of the Kyoji Kaiman. This isn't the exact, I've reconfigured this or reformatted it, so it will all fit on one sheet of paper. Folded. Everything's there, all the whole text is there, and things that are missing are basically graphics and some material at the very end about how this came to be. But it's all there. And in the chat, I believe there is a link to the Kyoji Kaiman, the previous version, which is, as I say, all the text is there on the website. So, and if you have a chat book, it's on page 37. That's the one we just did tonight for our evening service. So I'll start with an overview of the Kyoji Kaiman. I just want to mention that I'm organizing this class probably a little differently than I have seen it organized before. And it has to do with how I come to things, how I study things. I like to do sort of the big picture overview first and then gradually narrow into the nitty-gritty. So I'm going to spend some time on, I'll talk about that in a minute. So the overview of the Kyoji Kaiman, the way it's organized, it starts with a paragraph that's just titled Giving and Receiving a Teaching the Precepts, and it has to do, what I like to think of it as, it has to do with transmission. Where do these precepts come from? How have they been transmitted down through the generations? So I'll talk a little bit about that. Then we'll talk quite a bit more about the gateway of contrition. What is contrition? How does that work? And how do we work with that? Then it goes into the refuges, the three refuges, taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, also known as the three treasures, or the triple gem, or there's a variety of ways to refer to those. And then we have the three pure precepts, cease from evil, do only good, and take selfless action. And then we have the 10 grave precepts. And those are the ones that get down into the nitty-gritty that people wrestle with. And a lot of times in these classes, we end up spending a lot of time on these grave precepts. I'm not going to do quite as much of that for this class, and we're not going to get to them in a specific way until class 4. I'm sure some of them will come up before then. But in terms of actually studying them, I'm going to not do it until the 4th class. And then the 4th and the 5th class, and then we'll do a wrap-up. Hi there, come on in. Make sure you get one of these. You could, yes. This is what we're studying. All right. So as I mentioned, typically we often spend our time on the bulk of our time on the 10 grave precepts, because they get into specifics, and so they're sometimes a little easier to grasp. They don't seem quite so abstract, perhaps. Sometimes these precepts get divided up into the precepts of body, speech, and mind. This has never been persuasive to me, because I think they're all involved with all of them. So I have a hard time making that distinction. So this year, I'm going to just follow the organization of the Kyoji Kanban itself. And I'm going to start tonight with just the transmission paragraph and the contrition verse. Let's talk a minute about precepts as vow and precepts as path. Those are two ways of thinking of the precepts, which are a little different from thinking of these as just rules. They're not just rules, hard and fast rules, and they're not quite the same as like a New Year's resolution. So I wanted to talk just a moment about what is vow and what is path. So we talk about taking vows or stating intentions. Sometimes we use the word aspiration. My intention or my aspiration is, and we might do that for a period of time. And what I have found over the years with practicing with the concept of vow is that what it does is it turns my attention to a particular direction, to a particular thing. So often what happens with a vow is I'll say, I vow to cultivate compassion. Okay, so that's always been one of my favorites. Again, as I say, that's sort of your big overarching picture. The kind of stuff that I really get into. So I vow to practice compassion, cultivate compassion. Well, what does that mean? I have to figure out what that means. And generally what happens in the course of working on that vow, I discover all the ways that I am not working on compassion, all the ways that I am falling short. It's easy to start thinking of myself then as a failure, but that's not the case. The case is I've turned my attention to it, and now I'm seeing things that I didn't see before. And so it just seeing it, recognizing it, turns my attention and changes my behavior. It's a kind of an interesting thing, the way that works. Precepts as path. There is an article that Kyogen wrote years ago. He actually gave it as a Dharma talk and then turned it into an article that's on the blog. But I also uploaded it to the website today and put a link to it on the calendar website page. So if you go to the Wednesday night classes, precept classes event on the calendar, click on that. In the body of that text, you will find a place that says precepts as path, and you should be able to click on that link, and it's a PDF. You can print it out if you want to. It's a very interesting article. He talks not only just about what the precepts mean, but how we follow a path, sort of our way of doing this, which I should probably talk a little about, but I'm not going to tonight. Maybe I better. So, because one of the things he does in that article is he talks about practices that we typically follow in regard to the precepts. So during this 6 weeks, many of us do what we call Kyoju Kaimon practice. And what that involves is you read the precepts out loud, or silently if you can't do it out loud, like, you know, people in prison or people with roommates, or, you know, there might be reasons why you can't do it out loud, but ideally, you just read it out loud. It doesn't have to be loud, but just you read it, and you just read through it. You don't have to stop and figure out what it means. You don't do any of that. It's just, you just recite it, just like we just did tonight, those of you who are here as a part of our evening service. So that's what we do in the morning. In the evening, there's a practice called recollection, which is not the same as, you don't usually do it during Zazen. You find a period of time, sometimes during retreat we will do it right before dinner. We'll have a half an hour of study or recollection practice. You find a place where you can sit quietly and just kind of, the Kyogen used to describe it as drawing the events of the day through the mind. So you just sort of go back through the day and you just sort of notice what happened. And notice if there's something that makes you kind of go, "Urk," you know, there's a little tightness or a little kind of a reaction to it. And just sort of notice that and kind of go, You don't have to stop and figure it out. You don't have to think, "Oh, I should have done it this way." You don't have to get into a whole story about it. Just notice it. And then go on through the rest of the day and then call it good. The next morning, when you go back through and read the precepts again, you may, not necessarily will, but you may find that when you're reading a particular precept, you sort of go, "Oh, that's what that was about." Or sometimes one will jump out at you, like, "This is one that I really need to work on, or one that I really need to pay attention to." So those are some of the ways that we work on this practice of as a path, of precepts as a path. So I encourage you to read that article. There's a lot of really good stuff in there. I'm not going to go into it a lot, but I wanted to at least outline that practice and suggest to people that you give it a try. It's pretty cool. Let's see. Oh, all right. Then I wanted to mention a couple of other things. Here's the precept study guide, and it is not on the website. What this is a kind of an edited transcript of Jikai Precepts classes at Dharma Rain, which at this point is, you know, I mean, when did we do this? It was done in, like, 2003. So, but it also has a lot of good stuff in it. Kyogen and other senior practitioners put this together, and I recommend it. As I say, it's not on the website. If you would like a copy of it, again, send me an email and I'll mail you one. And, you know, let's say $10 for this. And the other thing I will mention is Ethics and Precepts in Sangha Relationship, also known as our green book because it's green. This one is on the website, and I don't know if I put that link in there, but it's not that hard to find. It's in our documents, and it specifically looks at how we work with the precepts within a community. And it could be in this community of Dharma Ring, which is the way it's set up, that it actually has a lot of application to any community or a family or any place where you're dealing with Sangha relationships. So in terms of Dharma Ring, it talks about the different levels of participation, starting from someone who just walks in the door, to a member, to a person who is what we call a senior member, someone who has taken the precepts and been practicing here for at least a year, a lay disciple, a monk, and it sort of kind of goes up, and the kind of relationships that you have with other people in the Sangha. And then it goes through the precepts and talks about each one of those in those sort of relationships. And it's pretty fascinating. It's quite an elegant treatise of how one can look at the precepts and use them in your daily life. Let's see.
Gecko. You don't have a question?
The questions are...
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Actually, my question was just, I was wondering if people have questions on Zoom, are they free to chime in? Would you like them to call a questions section?
Yeah. If you have a question, go ahead and type it into chat.
Okay.
And we'll see, you talk to him, let me know, and, we can work on it that way. And, of course, here in the hall, if you have a question, do feel free to, raise your hand or say hi or something, because I can get on a roll and, and ignore you all. So, yell at me or something. Okay. I think that's mostly the sort of introductory stuff that I wanted to get to. So we'll get started. I have found over the years that I have a lot more interest in the beginning of the path and the beginning of the Kirjikaimon, and that, like I say, the order that it's in makes a lot of sense to me. I had a discussion on Saturday with several other senior students at Dharma Rain, and we talked about the precepts. And two of those seniors, one of them said they didn't really relate to most of it, but they found that the refuges made the most sense to them. So that was sort of their way into the precepts and what they mostly focused on. Another person said the three pure precepts, same thing. That's what made the most sense to them, and that's what they focused on. The fact is, all of the precepts include all of the other precepts, and over time we really start seeing that more and more clearly. But what I have found is that there's a lot of really important stuff right in the very beginning. And as I say, sometimes it's not so easy to grab onto because it is that sort of more overarching, it's not abstract. I don't find it abstract at all, but it's not quite as clear cut in terms of do this, don't do that. It's more about why we're doing this and what's really going on there, I think. So tonight I'm just going to talk about transmission and contrition. Next week, we'll look at the three refuges, at the three treasures, and talk about what refuge is. The third week, I'm going to talk about the three pure precepts. And I think I would agree with my friend who said that the three pure precepts really, really have it. In fact, the first one says, this is the source of all the laws of Buddhahood. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. So we'll do that. And then classes 4 and 5, we'll look at the 10 great precepts. Class 4, we'll look at the first 5, which some people say, like a great vow, they actually do a ceremony, a 5-precept ceremony. And these 5 are pretty universal to Buddhism. And then class 5 will be the next 5, the last of them. And then, of course, the 6th class, we'll do a wrap-up, and we'll do any further questions that people might have, that kind of thing. So I want to encourage you to ask questions. You can do it here in the chat, and you can, share it with everybody. Or you can send me an email if you want to just ask me. If you want to have a meeting with me, please send me an email. We'll set it up. Okay? All right. So let's read this first paragraph. So it says, the great precepts of the Buddhas are kept carefully by the Buddhas. We can talk about that word kept if you want to at some point. It's an interesting word. What does it mean to keep the precepts? Buddhas give them to Buddhas. Dharma ancestors give them to Dharma ancestors. The transmission of the precepts is beyond the three existences of past, present, and future. Enlightenment ranges from time eternal and is even now. Shakyamuni, the Buddha of this world, transmitted the precepts to Makakasho, and he transmitted them to Ananda. Thus, they have been transmitted down through the generations. This is the meaning of the transmission of living wisdom. So this business of transmission, this word transmission, has to do with the fact that we have a history, we have a lineage, we have an ancestry. an ancestral line that goes back roughly 2,600 years. And these first two names, these three names, Shakyamuni, Makakasho, and Ananda, are the beginning of the ancestral line that we chant. Yeah.
I'm wondering about transmission.
Mm-hmm.
When Shakyamuni transmitted to Makakasho, it was with the flower and the smile.
Uh-huh.
Is that also the transmission of the precepts?
So, yeah, that story about the flower and the smile has to do... the way he put it, as I recall, was something like, I transmit all of my dharma to. So, Shakyamuni, according to this thing that I recently read about the history of the precepts, his name for the religion he was founding was Dharma Vinaya. Now, dharma is in here. It means, it's translated as teachings, as scriptures, but it's also translated as the law, as in the law of gravity and how everything works. I would say it's included in what he transmitted to Makakasho, because basically he was saying at that point, Makakasho gets it. He understands it. And so the transmission that's been happening down through the centuries, millennia really, has been the way we say it, and it hasn't always been true, but for the most part it has been true, it's that it's face-to-face, it's heart-to-heart, warm hand-to-warm hand. So Shakyamuni and Makakasho had been practicing together for a long time, and at some point there was this recognition that happened that said, oh, Makakasho, you've got it. You know, I see you, and you're the one who, you get it, you get my dharma. And you can then pass it on and transmit it. And so that's the way it's been going. And then, so that includes all kinds of teachings. And we have all these sutras and all these things, and it was all oral tradition at that point. Writing didn't come in for another 500 years or so. And so the Buddha said, didn't start out by making all these precepts. He just said, well, here's, I think he had, there were four. So I was reading this history. It's a very interesting history. There were four. There were the first three great precepts, which is do not kill, do not steal. And at that point, it was remain celibate. Because he was very, these were for monks. The fourth one was can't remember how it was worded, but it basically means don't impersonate a Buddha. So, you know, it's warning people not to pretend to be something they're not. And then he said, I'll have to wait and see what other rules we need. And as time went on and they were in community, he began to realize, okay, so we need a rule about this, and we need a rule about that. And at some point they ended up with like 250 rules, which was called the Vinaya. And then there's all these different kind of lists of the different rules. Some of them, in all cases, women had to have more than men. Who knows?
Of course.
Of course. Because of course we're so bad or something, I don't know. And so there's a lot of different lists depending on whatever. And the thing that was crazy was that at some point they all got together after the Buddha died. They all got together and said, okay, so the Buddha said we could make some changes or get rid of the minor precepts, but not the major ones. Only thing, the only catch was that he never said which ones were which. So they decided they had to keep them all. Well, obviously over the centuries, things have been modified a bit because at some point, some of those rules didn't have anything to do with the basic things that were needed. Monks couldn't carry salt. They couldn't deal with money. There were a variety of things that were for that particular culture and situation in India, but didn't work as much when it went to China, for instance. So, but you'll find basic precepts throughout the sutras, throughout all of the teachings, throughout all of this time. And they agree pretty closely with what we're doing. And then I believe this formulation finally was put together. The Kyoji Kaimon itself, I think, was put together in Dogen's time, and or maybe before, but not much before, in Japan. So that's the ones that they're using. That's kind of a long answer, but hopefully that it does the job there. So transmission is, it, what this means is that this is not something that we just made up. You know, it means that this is something that people have been practicing, keeping, holding to, working on for a long, long time. And, maybe I'll let it go at that. I think transmission in itself is a fascinating subject and very difficult to really describe very well. So, okay. Now let's get to contrition, the gateway of contrition. Because of their limitless compassion, the Buddha's and Dharma ancestors have flung wide the gates of compassion to all living things. Although karmic consequence is inevitable at some point in the three periods of time, so remember the three periods of time was the past, present, and future, contrition brings freedom and immaculacy. As this is so, let us be utterly contrite before the Buddha. May the Buddhas and ancestors have compassion upon us, help us see the obstacles of suffering we have inherited from the limitless past, and lead us in such a way that we share the merit that fills the universe. For they in the past were as we are now, and we will be as they in the future. And then we have the contrition verse. All my past and harmful karma, born from beginning this greed, hate, and delusion, through body, speech, and mind, I now fully avow. A contrite heart is open to the Dharma and finds the gateway to the precepts clear and unobstructed. Bearing this in mind, we should sit up straight in the presence of the Buddha and make this act of contrition wholeheartedly. So there's a lot there. There's just a whole lot there. One of the things that strikes me, I'll just put a couple of things out there, but then we're going to do breakout groups with this. One of the things that strikes me is that it starts right out talking about compassion, which is not typically the way we think of contrition, but there it is. Freedom and immaculacy. Immaculacy means literally it means no spot or what's the word I'm looking for?
Blemish?
Like no dirt or no, yeah. It's
blemish.
What was that?
Blemish.
Blemish, yeah, that's a good word. So it means free and clean and pure. So, with the matter of contrition. So what I'd like to do, a couple of things. The way I wrote it down here, which I think you could come up with some more questions here, I want to do breakout groups. Let's see, what did I say we had? Let's say groups of five. And we can, over here, we can just do, one side and the other side. And maybe one group can go into the dining hall. I know that sometimes it gets kind of noisy in here if we have too many. And let's do breakout groups for 15 minutes. So hold on, I want to say, here's some of the things I want you to consider. So first of all, what comes up for you when you hear the word contrition or contrite? And what do you think our version of it means? What do you think? Is it the same? Is it different? And if so, how is it different? Kind of take a look at this contrition verse and see what you make of it. See how, what kinds of things come up for you, what kinds of questions you might come up with. What I'd like to do is for each group to have someone be able to report out some of the basic things that you talked about, questions in particular or insights or, maybe answers to some of these questions, whatever you come up with. So let's take 15 minutes and break into these groups and talk about these questions a little bit, and then we'll come back in and see where we are. Okay? Which group wants to go to the diagonal? Why don't you guys go back there and turn on the light on there, and then you guys could just kind of get together over here and see where it goes.
Senior member has to report.
Very well. what are your names? Yes, good. I'm Rachel.
I'm Kyle.
John.
Katie.
Katie.
Okay, so the first question was, what is the word contrition for help for you?
I just think it's a word I don't use or hear very often. So I think it feels very foreign.
Uh-huh. I'm just giving everybody a prompt.
Yeah, good. I mean, obviously I know the definition, but I'm like not really sure how it applies to me.
I'm sort of in the same boat. Like, so the definition that I have for it, is it somewhat fixed?
Yeah, I think that's what I'm trying to say. Maybe I do it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I feel confused.
I'm not in the same boat, but I feel like I can recall like a vague definition, and what I associate it with was like the thing in the Catholic Church, right? like our sins or something.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I think of that definition of that, I sort of associate it with, like in this context of being, like, open and, like, humble, but also having humility. So that's what comes to mind for me, at least.
Like a feeling of humility?
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to deal with my, Christian upbringing, so contrition is clearly all about self-flagellation, what's wrong with me, I'm sinful, looking at my sinful nature, all of that kind of stuff. So, my first ran into this, I was really like, oh shit, I really want to hear that. But I'm trying to come to a different understanding, and part of what I've been working on is thinking about our monkey brain, our what we evolved with, and the monkey brain that produces all these thoughts that I have to deal with, and looking at animals. You see that they have constant greed, constant fear, constant fright, and and overreaction, and all of that. And when you watch that, you realize, that's what we evolved with, as animals, fear and all of that stuff, which kept us safe. But it's a problem trying to live, calmly and not be afraid or greedy or whatever. So I'm trying to think of the contrition as saying I don't embrace that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have a lot of flaws that came into the world with me. That was part of being human, and they have these flaws, I recognize they cause problems, and I'm willing to let go of them and try to find another way to live. So I recognize that they are the problem, and they're there, and you know they keep happening. And so I still don't feel like, you know, it's really hard for me to get away from that contrition word, as contrite, as ashamed and bad. But I really don't think that they mean that. I think it means a willingness to step away from those and not embrace them.
I worked with contrition a lot last year during precepts time in the beginning of the year, because I was really focusing on recovery-based Buddhist practice. And in recovery, Buddhist recovery, there's a big emphasis on forgiveness and forgiveness meditation. And there's actually a lot of similarities between the concept of forgiveness and contrition, because both require an acknowledgement of accepting what happened as just the truth, just like a wholehearted yes, this is what happened. There is something unwholesome about it, and I accept it, and I'm upright, you know, like open arms. And so in doing forgiveness meditation, which usually involves, you know, thinking of like a specific event that caused harm in some way, there was a lot of, you know, sometimes the thinking of those painful memories would cause like a wanting to cower or retreat, or a wanting to fight it or cover it up. And that contrition comes in, and it really, that acceptance helps you to just stay steady, even when those waves of fear or anger or self-judgment come up, and that shame thing. And so that's where I'm at with contrition right now. I still have a lot of that residual energy from practicing with it that way last year. And I think that Dharma Rain, one of the prompts was, how does Dharma Rain kind of practice with it? And I've heard Dharma Rain talk a lot about that sort of like wholehearted acknowledgement of just like, yes, beginningless greed, hate, and delusion. First noble truth, there is suffering, period, and I am a part of it. You know, I have experienced it. And I'm in samsara, right? Like I'm a part of this web, I think it feels different than sort of what I'm used to in a Western context of like confession or, you know, that sort of like peace. Yeah.
what Don and Yutong have said about contrition makes me think of something that I've been working with, which is I've been preparing to facilitate the Awakening to Whiteness series, which means I've been doing a lot of research, reading a lot of materials, listening to a lot of podcasts about whiteness and about race in the United States, and sometimes it's intensely painful. And that's what my body is made out of. And I can't be apart from my body. It's white. and I get to exist because of it. And I get to have this really lovely life because of it.
And holding all of that, it feels like a lot to hold sometimes. It feels like a lot to hold anytime I stop and think, oh, I'm holding all of this, like, generational grief in my body from, you know, getting to be what I am because of it. And I can't be apart from it. But just looking at it and thinking, and my life is still beautiful and whole. And I'm not it's not like fault. It's not a fault. But it's part of the whole that there's this ugliness. And I wonder if that's what contraction is.
There's something in Tom was saying about the, you know, being accepting it, recognizing it, and still being whole and upright and good. I think it's such a hard word for me. Contrition is just, you know, I mean, we use that word in my experience, you know, growing up, you know, every Sunday, and it meant something different. But one of the keys is this, I fully avow, you know, and I go, you know, you're thinking, okay, I've just been endlessly greedy and endlessly this, and you go, I fully avow. And I go, that sounds like upright, you know, that sounds like, and so then you think, okay, no, it's like, oh no, this is how it is. This is, you know, how we come into the world. This is how we are in the world. And, you know, yeah. So I never claim to be perfect, you know, and so that sort of says, all right, I have to behave in a different way. I have to consciously behave in certain ways and learn new things in order not to run afoul of those impulses and that baggage.
I'm curious if Judy or Carl has more to add.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think to me it's not grammatical, but what everyone's saying is, it seems like it's kind of indicating that it's inevitable for us to do harm or for there to be problems in which we're involved or have influence on simply because of, I guess, karma. I mean, being, it says, like, from the beginning, let's create an illusion, like, that indicates, like, that's before me, and beginningless. I mean, that's, you know, like you were saying, it's like what it is to be human is just to have these difficulties. And it's really, to me, it's kind of like the core of what Buddha talks about, like, life is suffering, but, like, where the, there's that sense of this need, this attraction to attachment. It's not, it's kind of like, it doesn't lay blame. It's not like this is your fault, you're a bad person, that you may have caused bad things or been part of a system that's oppressive or, you know, had feelings that weren't wholesome or whatever. But so you don't have to feel shame for it, but you can acknowledge that those things exist, that there was harm, and that you can go forward trying consciously to do less of that, to be different, and that doesn't mean you're perfect, and you'll recite this again, you know? So I kind of, like, I did not grow up in a religion that used the word, and so it doesn't have baggage for me, So I kind of put my own fresh spin on it, and I feel like it's a little bit like confession in a positive way, like confessing to myself that it's okay. I'm just a human. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree with it. Like all of that, everything I've said, I feel like the line of the shred card is open to the Dharma and finds the gateway to the precepts, care, and instructive. Yeah, I guess that's kind of where I came from, like with that, like, openness to humility, like, you know, accepting that, like, yeah, I've done things that are wrong in the past, but like, being open to change and like knowing that and that I'm not that sad and my heart's not sad and my brain's not sad. I think we move and grow through like all of that. I think that's where I think that's where I can get in this way.
Are those new slippers?
Yeah.
They look cozy.
They're comfy. Fortunately, these don't. You can get these without a lot of money. And they're basically for $10 a piece or so. So, I do some mending and whatever, but this year I just decided I could go and get some more. See, we have people starting to come back. This is good. All right. So what I'd like to do probably is just start with Zoom folks and start with group number one, and whoever from group number one wants to unmute and talk, just say a couple of highlights of what you talked about and any questions and issues that may have come up. I'd love to hear it.
No. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, so Utah has made it possible for you.
Don't yell, don't yell. Okay, I'm from room number one. And we each spoke about our...
we have speakers? Oh, we should.
Yeah.
Okay, let's... Well, we can't hear something.
We can't hear something.
What's going on? Yeah, we have speakers. Okay.
Can you try again?
I should press my space button.
Yay, thank you.
That's perfect.
All right, so a little loud.
Oh. Okay,
how about this?
That's good.
Okay. We talked about our experience with encountering the word contrition and what experience we might have with that, and then we talked about the you know, not so much the definition of it, but our experience with it, or something like that. So we talked about confession, we talked about regret, we talked about pride, which I thought was really interesting. Let's see, we talked about blame, we talked about different religions and how do they follow the same kind of sequencing as, you know, coming to a place of not necessarily sin, but regret, certainly, or mistake. So we talked about that, and we said they were different. They spoke about it differently. Some emphasized it more, and some maybe emphasized it a little overload. But we all thought it was probably a good thing and a necessary thing to get in the door there, the gateway. Yeah. Given that we are egotistical creatures and somewhat resistant to something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay.
All right, what about group two?
Did the second group have a representative? I don't see anybody volunteering to speak for the second group.
I wonder if we were this. I have no idea if we were the second group.
Oh, okay.
So we don't have for sure.
I mean, I'm not the appointed spokesperson, but maybe because none of us are speaking, we are the second group.
I think we were group three, but.
Oh, okay. Then I'm going to close up.
Okay. No, we were group two.
Okay. We have a group two. All right. So what did you all come up with?
We talked about, similar to group one, a little bit about contrition and where each of us had sort of experienced it and how some in different religious traditions, how it was experienced. And then talked about a couple different phrases in that verse, the born from beginningless grief, hate, and delusion. Wait, let me find this. For they in the past were as we are now, and we will be as they in the future. And how, you know, for each of us, that phrase had some weight and depth and feeling for working with contrition. I wasn't prepared to speak, so that's my vague. If anybody else wants to chime in.
That's great. Yeah. Okay. All right, let's get group three.
Hi. It's very hard to say what we said because it's all so ambiguous in a way. I think that there was just a note that the as it's stated in the setting and use, it feels more freeing and less weighted and heavy and guilty or guilt-ridden than in other settings or how we may more think of the word. And that it is a way to embrace and being forgiven for being human and the faults that come with that. And a way to take responsibility for our own suffering, and that we just, there were some opposing terms that it feels more in recognizing remorse versus the guilt, or a sadness versus a internal "this is what I did." So more of an awareness than a self. Centered sort of thought. and that it shows kind of a as opposed to an aversion, a promotion of non-attachment. And so those were the ways that we just kind of noted that it is helpful and freeing and different than it may be used in other settings.
Cool. All right. Group four.
Okay, this was me. Wasn't really prepared to talk, so I didn't really take notes. I hope I've got everything. Rather similar to what we've just heard from group three. It started out with bringing up the word remorse, and that led into a discussion of the difference between remorse as an idea, which might not be terribly helpful, and remorse as an actual experience, which can be transformative, which is related to contrition. And then the idea of contrition as an active experience of turning to face the responsibility of what one has done, and how that is a beginning, a freeing up for the future. I'm not describing this very well. And then the word compassion came up, which led to the idea of this being tied into compassion for oneself, and wondering if, just something I'd really like to discuss in the future in this course, if possible, how that's related. Because it's the first big word in there, in the first paragraph, and how it's related to the concept of compassion with oneself. Also as an experience, I mean, not just a word, not just an idea, not just, you know, nice ideas about oneself, but an actual experience of compassion for oneself, and how that's related to contrition. And then there was the idea of contrition as a vehicle for being compassionate. So it's kind of the other side of this. The central idea being that of contrition being not so much a wallowing in memories or anything like that, but a turning to face, a fully turning to face what one has done and take responsibility for it, not in an active way, right? And the word humility came up a lot as well in relation to this. I think I've covered pretty much everything, I hope. Right, so that was more or less the important things that came up in the discussion.
Great. That's a lot. All right. Was there one more group? Did you have five groups or four?
I think that was everyone. Right?
Okay. So let's get.
No. Okay.
Wait a minute. Okay. So this was the group I was in. Okay. So let's go ahead and do this side of the room, and then we'll do the other side.
Yes. Interestingly, our conversation mirrored.
Why don't you come up over here by the microphone? Because it picks up pretty well, but. It works better if you're close to it.
Is this okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Great. Our conversation mirrored those of our colleagues here to the extent that, our understanding of what contrition was coming into the class was very much colored by our previous religious experiences. Two of us were Catholic, and that in particular, I think, sort of colored how we understand that word. There was very much a focus on humility. So it's remorse and regret, but it's to be contrite is to be humble about one's failings in the past. Naturally we talked about how this was a particularly propitious mindset, this state of contrition, for accepting the Dharma, for understanding the Dharma, for approaching the Dharma. Again with this spirit of humility. I think as the last speaker noted, this is not I think she used the term, turning to the light, recognizing what one has done. But also, you know, as I think she was alluding to, not ruminating about it, you know, not letting it cripple one. You know, so this is a, you know, if we're going to reap the rewards of our humility here or whatever, we're going to sit up straight next to the Buddhas, you know, recognize what we've done, you know, live up to the dharmic to the karmic consequences, but not, you know, recognize, but don't let it overwhelm us. You know, don't ruminate about it. You know, we've got, you know, we've got other work to do. You know, don't repeat our mistakes, but you know, don't let this cripple us either.
Great. Yeah, that's what we do. And then over here.
Yeah, we started out with sort of, I don't know, confusion or like not really sure what the word meant. At least some of us had that feeling. And humility came up, and past religious baggage came up. And then we started talking about other ways that we might look at it that were more... We had a sense that it, like, humility is involved, but it wasn't so much about like feeling bad about or feeling like shame or guilt about. And someone proposed it's like a... like an embracing of wholeness. Yeah. And to sit up straight in it is to let all of like an acceptance of past situations and to recognize them as they are, like these things actually happened and I actually played this part and I could feel sort of like shame and crowd in on myself, but I can also just sit up straight and see them for what they are and accept the events and the feelings and whatever it is for what it is. There was some talk about how we might turn toward gathering or turn toward like sort of being thoughtful about our actions instead of just allowing habit or reactivity to take over, and wanting to look toward the things that are not just habit or reactivity and offering contrition in that way. And a lot of the things that we talked about at the end were about like the wholeness and the acceptance and like seeing things as they are, as just what makes us human, what connects us, is that it's not a factor of blame or fault or shame, but we've all done things that caused harm and we've all had things done to us that were harmful. So seeing the wholeness of it and being with it as part of wholeness and as like acceptance seemed like a conclusion that we were turning toward.
Okay, well put. I like it.
Thank you.
That's great. And one of the other things we mentioned in this group over here that I sat in on was the precept that comes up a little later about praising self and blaming others. So couple of different groups have talked about this matter of blaming. And when I, my Dharma talk on Sunday, when I was talking about karma, which is a lot of what this is about, Kierkegaard actually used that word too, about blame. There's no blame to it at all. It's just, as you say, kind of accepting things as they are and recognizing them. So the other thing I wanted to, that I that came up for me when I was hearing some of this was that, oh, I intended to talk about the RAIN acronym and I forgot to do that. So I'm going to do that now. Oh, and I have just about enough time to do that before we're done for tonight, but so RAIN, R-A-I-N, This is a teaching that I got from Jack Kornfield. He's published this in a variety of things. I saw it in The Wise Heart, but it's also been in other places that he has published it. So R means recognition. This is actually a pretty good way to describe how we work with these precepts and how we work in general with Buddhist practice. So R is for recognition. So one of the things that precepts helps us do with doing the reading of it is it gives us some sense of here are some things that can really trip you up. So pay attention. So when we recognize that something has happened, something that has triggered us or something that we have done that is a pattern of ours, that's the first thing. And Kyogen used to tell me, once you recognize something, its days are numbered. The number may be a high number, but basically what he's saying is, that is the first step, and that is essential. And once you do that, then things start moving. The second step, the A, stands for acceptance. This is this acceptance that you're talking about here, accepting things as they are and embracing them as they are. So we recognize it, and then we say, because typically what we like to do is say, oh no, that didn't happen, or I don't like that, or, you know, we kind of try to push it over here. You know, it's something I did a lot in my life for decades. So just being able to turn towards it, accept it, say, here it is. So there's the A. The I is investigation, which we're not going to get into a lot here, but kind of. And the way to do that, so I mean I could go into a lot about investigation, but the way to do that is to use the four foundations of mindfulness. What's happening in the body, what's happening in terms of feelings or emotions, what's happening in the mind, what is the mind telling you about, the stories that are going on about this, and what's really true. That's the four foundations of mindfulness, and those are ways that we investigate something that has happened or something that we've done or some pattern that we're noticing, whatever. So very powerful practice. The N, the first time I heard this, the first time I got this teaching, the N stands for non-identification. That one blew my mind because I realized how much I identify. So part of what goes on with contrition in the classic sense is okay, so if I have done a bad thing, then I am a bad person. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's identification. I have screwed up, so I am a screw up. Okay? So what this is doing is basically saying, this has happened. So for example, just, you know, we're going to talk about, but it's not all my fault. I was born white, therefore I have white privilege. Therefore, I am in some ways participating in the harm being done by white supremacy in this culture. Now, I can say I'm a terrible person because I'm white. That makes no sense. Really, when you look at it, it makes no sense. I'm not a terrible person because I'm white. I was born that way. Okay. And it is also true that I am a participant in a white supremacist culture by virtue of being white. So that's not something for me to say I'm a terrible person and so therefore I should just hide my face or change my color or something. It means that I simply accept this is how it is and I need to find a way to change that. I need to not even change, I'm not going to change my whiteness. What I need to change is my to find ways that I do participate and see if I can find ways to, let's see, what would I say? So if you find yourself in a pattern, you try to find a way to stop being in that pattern. That's really what it is. So this gets into the first pure precept, which is cease from evil. This is why we say, so stop. So how do I stop doing this? How do I stop participating? That's really what it comes down to. How do I stop participating? Ideally, how do I start changing it? How do I start finding another way to work in this culture? Okay? So that's just an example. It's probably kind of a complicated example, really, but it's the one that occurs to me because right off the bat. So non-identification to me has been a huge one, and it gets into that precept of praise and blame that shows up later. So what, this is what I mean by all of the precepts are going to come in before we actually get to talking about all of those. They're all going to have an application to the things that we're talking about as we're going on here. So I liked the word gateway because that's already here, the gateway of contrition. So the way that I see that this works is that, and I talk about this with people in prison because this comes up quite a bit. It's, you know, people in prison are totally identified with their crime. And people tell them that all the time. You are a thief. You are a whatever. And so they get this barrage all the time. And what that does is it's an attack. It creates resistance. So that is not really very helpful. So the thing that is useful, though, is to say, the question I like to ask is, well, how's that been working out for you? So that's another way to think of it. It's kind of like you look at your life and you think, well, maybe this isn't exactly what I really wanted in my life. Maybe this isn't the way I want to be doing my life. Maybe this is actually causing me more problems, more harm than good. What do I really want in my life? So for me, this has to do with recognizing what's been going on in my life, accepting what's been going on with my life, investigating it and trying to see if that makes sense, and what might need to change, and not identifying with it, but simply saying, well, that was then, and now what should happen? So that's one way to look at it. There's a bunch of different ways to look at it, but the gateway, so I loved it. Somebody said contrition as a vehicle for compassion, or contrition as a turning towards, to create a gateway towards a different action, a different way of being in the world. And this is what I believe the precepts are about, is a transformation of how we are in the world, a transformation of our lives in a positive direction. Oof, it is 9:00. I wasn't all together sure I was going to have enough for 9:00, except for the fact that I always end up being able to talk long enough. Did we end up with comments or questions?
There was one from Emily. Yeah, and she was interested in talking more about the RAIN acronym. That's a really valuable teaching. I suggested maybe Samzin, and that people can set up an informal meeting with a teacher by contacting staff at dharmarain.org.
Great.
And then maybe it'll be brought up again in class.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it. It's out on the web. I'll see if I can find a link to it. And I can maybe send
it to folks, in the chat box.
All right. So it's 9:00. We need to do Vespers, and we'll just stay right here and go ahead and do Vespers rather than it gets too crazy.